Hello, this is Deborah Anderson, the Black Woman Animator, coming back to you with another video. And in this video, I have Milton Knight. Welcome.
Hi, very welcome. Glad to be
Can
here.
you introduce yourself?
Well, let's see. Milton Knight, as you say, I am a cartoonist and painter and writer, just about anything you can think of. And I've been in the business for about over 40 years, maybe 45 years. Started out in comic books and went on to do illustration, animation, directing, a lot of different things.
You're from Mineola, Long Island, New York. How was it growing up, and what is your origin story?
Well, I was born in Mineola and raised in Westbury, and I don't know what to tell you about my life. I knew I wanted to be an artist. I saw it as a career, actually, not just being Van Gogh or something. And let's see, I went to after school in high school, I went to BOCES Cultural Arts Center. Elsewhere in Long Island, I know that a lot of people have come from there. And I started by writing scripts for Richie Rich when I was like 16, and went on from there to do other things, a lot of other things for magazines and comic books. I worked for Marvel and DC and independents like Fantagraphics, and just did stuff. Let's see, I did Mighty Mouse and Betty Boop and Ninja Turtles, and I had my own independent comics. One was called Hugo, another one was called Midnight. And so I worked in that way until I moved to LA about 1991, and started work as an animator and then a director. And since then, my animation work pretty much dried up in the 1997, 98. So I went back to doing print cartooning, some advertising work, a little bit of comics. And I guess that's where I am now. I'm peacefully semi-retired.
What do you feel is your cultural makeup? And that's not to say what is your ethnicity or race, but what is the culture of how you live your life and the uniqueness of who you are?
Well, let's see. I read a lot of books. I go to art museums, study art. I'm really into music and how it works with visual content. And culturally, I'm all over the place. I really can't, you know, I'm into fine art, again, music. Those are the main things. And I get a lot of my inspiration from pop culture, kind of making fun of it, the movies and magazine covers and illustration. That's my series of work I'm doing right now. So I guess what I, I like bad movies and some good movies. I tend towards drama rather than comedy. Let's see, I suppose where I'm at culturally, I'm really open to anything, but I'm like a mid 20th century person, from the 20s to the 60s or 70s. And so it's the aesthetic from that time, that period, American, you know.
So let's go through some projects that you've worked on that, you know, you mentioned some of them And, you know, sometimes IMDb is wrong, so feel free to correct me on anything. Cool World. You're known for being a character designer for the Robotnik that was on Adventures of Sonic the Hedgehog. And you were a storyboard artist on that. The Twisted Tales of Felix the Cat, The Pink Panther, Casper, Seabear and Jamal, Class of 3000, The Replacements, and then some music album covers you've done, Sheiks and Vamps, 1920s Dance Bands, Laughter from the Hip, The Definitive Fats Waller, Volume 2, Hallelujah, Halloween Stomp, Haunted House Party, K. Rico, Mozambique, Sissy Man Blues, and much, much, much more. But are there any notable things you want to say about what you worked on?
Well, I didn't work on Casper, so that's
totally okay.
Never did.
Okay.
But let's see. What is there? What can I say about it? I was on it night and day, and just trying to get along. A lot of people think that because I created, I designed that robot that I'm still getting royalties to this day, and that is absolutely wrong. It was just another week's work. The main thing is the series of drawings I've been telling you about, which can be seen on my Patreon page, which is named after me, the drawings of pop and pulp culture, and I probably just mentioned the paintings. I'm really into the way paint works and black and white. I am into the using the materials, and I do not relate to computer graphics at all. I use them to do corrections on my black and white drawings, and I use them for animation, like you'd use cells. That's another one of my projects. But I like the tactile feeling. To me, animation isn't just making things move. It is an expressive medium. And that just doesn't work in CGI. What you do in CGI is to create believable environments. And I'm not into that. I'm more into the abstract, even if I use, you know, comic characters or semi-serious characters. I alter my techniques according to what the character is and feels. I may ink one way, I may ink another way, or I use that application to paints as well. So AI and all that, I'm sorry, not my cup of tea. I understand that of the artists that are on one particular program, I'm on that list. And well, okay, fine, there's going to be a civil lawsuit about that. That's going on now. But I wonder how they can possibly use what I do. And I really don't necessarily want to know either, because I find AI art to be ugly. It makes my skin crawl.
Yeah, pretty much in the animation industry, AI is a taboo and not accepted.
Well, I mean, that's where the CGI and Flash comes in. It's not animation as I worked with it anymore. It's you have the set of drawings and you move them about. I really relate them more to puppeteering than animation or a cartoon. Cartoon, forget it. It's programming. It's not really cartoons in that sense of the word.
So what do you love about animation and art?
Well, like I said, the expressions that can happen, the action. I love to draw action. Let me see, the comedy and the drama of it. Communication is one of the main things. And I like to show off my knowledge of classic art as well as cartooning. Somebody said to me once that he liked my work because I don't cheat. I don't resort to simple cartooning methods to get the point across. I try to draw and use both facts and fantasy.
Yeah, when I interviewed Donald Towns, he was saying he, you know, was using Photoshop, but he didn't cheat either. You know, how they can use the fill tool and stuff. He still painted every stroke.
Yeah, that's the way it is to me, too.
So I heard you mention that you got a job in Los Angeles pretty quickly when you initially moved here, and even that you didn't expect it or want to get a job that soon. What did you think your original journey to getting a job was going to be? Or were you planning to do more exploring? Like, why didn't you expect to get a job so soon?
Well, I figured I'd just get used to the town. See, mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I'd been to LA before, but I just wanted to tour around for like a little while. And I visited Rob Bakshi in his studio, and he said he wanted me now. And it was a job. I couldn't pass it up. But things just happened so fast. I was surprised.
What would you say is your biggest breakthrough in your career, or do you think you had multiple breakthroughs?
Yeah, I don't know if there's one major one. I mean, basically, I broke through with everything I did. Started out doing scripts, and I had always thought about working for Harvey Comics, you know, the Richie Rich publishers. And then I set my eye on illustration. I met some people who were into that. And so on and so forth. Things either just happened, but a lot of it was having a goal and my aiming towards that goal. And the other thing is just trying to make a living. It was really hand to mouth in New York. Even though I was doing a lot of work, I was definitely, you know, not rich. And one of the breakthroughs, I suppose, is that I, at a certain point, I had been living in a place in Queens, and I had to move because my roommate was moving. And I didn't know what I was going to do. I didn't want to go back home. So I went to a hotel called the Jane West Hotel on Jane Street and West Street, and worked from there, you know, in the middle of misery, little cell room and all of that. And then a woman who wanted to be an artist's agent, I kind of like, she picked me up to like work with her, and she moved me into to an apartment in Brooklyn. The connection didn't work out, but that's what finally got me a place to live in New York, where I stayed for another 7 years. And then things were varying in quality of work, and Howard Chaykin was in Los Angeles, and he says, "Milton, nobody wants your work there. Come here." And so I did, and breakthroughs, I guess that those things I listed were my biggest breakthroughs.
What's one thing you wish you had known when you began your career?
I wish I had known people better. I wish I had better social skills, because I was frankly coming out of an environment that I didn't learn them. And it really does take that kind of a knowledge to just get along in life and maneuver your way through the business. I just got through by the skin of my teeth. So if anything, I'd like changed. It was that. I wish I could have done more, and I wish I could do more, but I just don't see the avenues anymore. Mm-hmm. What do younger cartoonists do besides being on the web? Maybe getting a network thing that lasts about 6 months. The way I see it, the art cartoons as a career has just about bottomed out. I don't understand it anymore.
I feel like when I in my 20s, I was very much, you know, my hard work will get me there. And then I kind of realized the network thing, and then I started playing around with it, mostly in like volunteer organizations and stuff like that. And it was working out for me. So, you know, I lived in New Orleans for about 12 years before moving to LA. So I'm kind of happy that I stopped being hard-headed and like kind of leaned into the networking thing before moving to LA. Because I think, you know, two out of the three jobs that I got in the animation industry was from my network. So I'm like, all right, I'm glad I kind of grew. what do you feel is your superpower? And it doesn't have to be animation or art related, but what do you feel is like your superpower?
Persistence. Kind of know people by now. Mm-hmm. Openness to a lot of different things.
Mm-hmm.
I feel that the brain shouldn't stop. I know a lot of people my age, even younger, who decide that they know all they want to know, all they have to know. So they kind of shut the mind off, and it's there for the rest of their lives. And I don't want to be like that. I just want to keep progressing. So whatever you'd call that, that's one of the main superpowers. Also, ability to communicate. A lot of times, like on Facebook, people say I put my points across very well. And I don't try to put on a show.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a directness. I don't want to like waste time on a lot of nonsense. Might as well get straight to the point.
What do you think people misunderstand the most about you?
I don't think about those people.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like, you know, they either get me or don't. And, you know, if they don't, if there's not a mutual understanding, I simply don't run into any problem with that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I'm able to write that kind of stuff off because we're all going to be ourselves. So, you either get it going or you don't.
What's one lesson your career taught you that you think everyone should learn at some point in life?
If you're working on a project with other people, is that if one person screws up, it affects everybody else way along the line. So I find that one has to be responsible, even when one is doing cartooning, even when one is doing art, can't let the rest of the process go to hell because of that. Gotta do a good job. And a lot of times I hear younger people saying, well, he must have hated this, he must have hated that. And it's like, whether you do or not, you got to do a good job on it. And one thing I don't like about the studios nowadays is that you have to be a team player. And you have to smile and you have to say, oh, yeah, well, everything's fine and everybody agrees with anybody. And when I got into animation, I was into the tail of the point where like, it's like you could say out loud, what am I going to do with this crap? And even if it is crap, you do your best on it. Sometimes something good comes out of it, but you didn't have to be personally involved in the project, and I feel that's what they want now. Another thing is patience, not putting all eggs in one basket, because I feel like a lot of people will learn nothing but cartooning or storyboard or whatever, and I don't feel that an artist should just do one thing. An artist has to become familiar with the every part of it, and has to be familiar with other kinds of art, whatever turns you on. Yeah, that's another thing. I keep going back to exposure and just learning. And to me, those are the important things that somebody's got to have. One has to have an ability to self-criticize and to self-edit. And a lot of people don't have that. They just, can't stand to face it. But when I'm working, I say out loud to myself, this is no good, or it's working, it's cool. But I'm always on, I see things, I try through other people's eyes. What is this really good or not? Does this put the point across? So that's one of another one of the main things that I feel an artist should know. And to I remember when I was pretty young, an animator named Dan Haskett, you may know him, he said to me to not do work for the fans, which is what everybody does now. Not to limit it now, just don't do it for them. And that was one of the most important things in my life.
Yeah, I feel like when we talk about independent work, and independent animation or whatever, I feel like that self-edit piece is what people need. Whether it's live action animation, because there was like a big, surge of like YouTube TV shows and movies in the 2010s, and sometimes I'll be watching it and it's like, you could have shot that scene over, right? You could have, like, they flubbed the line and it's like you could have did that over. Or like in animation, when people do independent animation, it's like the scenes are so long and boring and it's like edit.
Yeah, no, I know that's I think there's kind of a fear of being too hard on oneself. And a lot of times I do hear these days people say, well, all art is like art, and so it's all worthwhile. And I think that's garbage. If somebody obviously isn't putting themselves, if somebody isn't making an effort, I am not interested. So when I see the lousy stuff, the lazy stuff, I have to know that this is the standard at this time. The standards have gone down to an amateur level. And I see that even in shows that are on the networks. They're doing stuff a teenager would do, both in terms of scripting and drawing. And the thing is, another thing is that if you work in the studios, they don't want it nowadays. They don't want anybody who can do better than the creator. Everything's got to be on the same level of skill. So you can't outdo anybody. And students, people in the who go to college, you have to like get a college degree to work in animation, which I think is ridiculous. It's totally absurd. So you go there for a couple of years and you learn drawing, or I guess they do, and then they come out of it and they have to dumb down their skills to a Bob Burger's level. It just doesn't make sense. It's kind of a way of screening people out. I mean, who my age needed a degree to work in animation? Nobody. It just didn't work that way because they weren't cherry picking. They needed to get the shows done, and they'd hire anybody. I mean, anybody who could do it. And nowadays, there's all this friend business and, you know, team players and all that kind of garbage politics that have nothing to do with doing a good show. And it thoroughly alienates me. It's just got nothing to do with me anymore.
I think there's an interesting dynamic, particularly in, like, you know, these artists like Facebook groups or forums and Discords where, you know, some of us, we're in a area where if you posted your work, you know, you get critique, but some people don't want critique. They just want to post it for like the vibes or something. And it's just like, so you don't want me to become better.
Right. I mean, you know, nowadays you are usually the cartoonists are doing it for their club, for their circle of friends, and living by those standards. And so either everything is dandy because, you know, they're plugged into it, or you get these people who criticize on a personal level. And, you know, I've seen people traumatized by that. They're more cowardly now, I'd say. They will fall apart if their friends don't like their work. And they also stay in that circle. I've heard from people who said that, you know, their friends didn't like a certain thing, or I went out of the box. It's basically what it is. And that sort of thing, the whole group thing, can keep you at a point where you're not going forward. You're doing it for them, and you're afraid of going out of them, going out of the standard. So in a way, it's not even wanting to get better. It has nothing to do with improving. Nowadays, things are manuals and stuff are more about empowering than teaching to get better. It's kind of like patting on the head. So as far as I'm concerned, you stay the same. I mean, the manuals that I grew up with, they have drawings that I couldn't even do, but you worked up towards it. And I don't see anybody doing that now. And there is not the kind of criticism that you get from an editor anymore, because I had to live up to these people. And now, frankly, everything looks about the same. Everything moves about the same. So there is no drive to move beyond that. I see artists who are obviously not into anything but the styles they've got in front of them. And I've heard of artists saying, well, the only art I'm going to look at is anime manga from now on. And you don't, if there's a style, if it's like Bob Burger's or anime, you're not looking at people. You're not taking into account what real people are. So you're getting cartoons of cartoons of cartoons. There's just no point where it begins with any kind of perception. You're beginning from an anime character. And, you know, so you're not doing people. You're just doing more of that and sticking to it. I don't see people like starting with that stuff and saying, I'm going to learn from it and, you know, do what I want. It's more about doing that. So I see a lot of people on the web who don't really find their own voice. They're more about visual style. Oh, I got a style, than substance. And putting them, where, you know, I'm an old man, and I go on about when I was young. But an artist wanted to stick out like a sore thumb, and mm-hmm. because it was rebellion.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see that now. It's not encouraged.
If you could change one thing about the industry, what would it be?
The tendency now of hiring people who all are from the same school, who all have the same bringing up, all have the same culture, just to be able to fit in enough to get work there. And, you know, they'll go on about the good old days, about, you know, Warner Brothers, Disney, etc. And those people, they all had different backgrounds, and you get kind of a mix there. So I think that that's the main thing that I would change, is, you know, allowing a blend instead of buddies. Oh, we all came from the same school or whatever. It needs input from different places. So that to me, I feel. And I also feel that, you know, with the huge manga influence, is that people aren't building up their own cultures. I've said this before. You're kind of doing a culture that you only understand one third of. You don't know why they're doing that, why they do certain things. You don't study Japanese culture. You don't know why. You just, you know, kind of lift from it. My favorite artists would start from there. I mean, like, you know, Tezuka saw Bambi or the Western cartoons and started from there and did something that was very definitely Japanese. Now people are coming, you know, going way, way, way more recent, like Miyazaki, and they are doing this stuff, but there is no national to it. There is no "this is an American cartoon," because they're all trying to look Japanese, which they don't really understand. So I'd say, well, what's missing is just people finding their own voice and doing the world around them. I used to love cartooning or art when I could see where it came from. I could tell this was German, this was Italian, this, that, and the other thing. Now they're not trying for that. They're trying to, with the help of computers, we've got a world style going on here. And to me, it's just not exciting. When I said about my concept of American cartooning on a thread in Facebook, people thought I was putting on limits and being racist and this and that. It's not a matter of that at all. It's mm-hmm. a matter of everybody being unique and yeah. offering, you know, something that no other place would. I post a lot of clips from old cartoons from all over the world, and people can tell if it's, whatever country it's from. They can tell it's not from America, and I think that's great. And in animation now, they are sending all the actual animation to the same group of studios, tending to be in the Far East. So it doesn't matter where it comes from anymore, because it's all going to be the same. It's all, what can I tell you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like in a, you know, American or like Western context of, we live in this country where it's like, there's no foundation of who you are, and it's right. like this colonizer standpoint. So people are like colonizing Japanese culture or colonizing this, and you don't even realize you're doing it. And so if right. you don't have a solid foundation of who you are or where you come right. from or anything, then you're just yeah. going to take from other things with no thought to what it comes from.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's what's going on. People don't even see ripoffs anymore. I saw it very early. We'll say when I was in the 90s, Ren and Stimpy was very popular. And it got so that people didn't even know that they were ripping it off. They simply didn't know. It came from, it's the same thing with anime. And you know, other styles. It's they become so normalized. I mean, look, I mean, they're still doing Ren and Stimpy after 30 years. The animation has not grown. I mean, you look at the 20th century. You couldn't possibly compare something that was made in the 20s to something that was made in the 40s. I mean, Earth difference, as different as can be. And now I look at the animation for the last 40 years, and it has stagnated. People are still doing Ren and Stimpy and the idea of anime that we had 40 years ago. And The Simpsons, I mean, you can look at work that was done in the 1990s and look at it today, and it's barely moved ahead. And now that's normal. They decided that people don't want change.
Yeah, there's no appreciation. There's just like appropriation. And even if you look at, you know, clothing, if you look at TV shows, you can see when a TV show was in the 80s, you can see a TV show in the 90s. But once you get to like the 2000s, like, and then the you know, younger kids are kind of taking from the 90s so soon. Like, and yes. like, I mean, when I was growing up, we did do like the flare pants or whatever that, you know, kind of looked like bell bottoms, but you could still tell it was the 90s. Yeah, right. We didn't copy the 70s.
Yeah. Well, you know, culturally, America has stagnated. And I think that's because of everybody coming from the same college and sending the stuff to the same places overseas. They do not encourage any sort of forward thinking. I don't think we've formed an American culture since the 90s. There are other reasons too, but I think people have become beaten down, discouraged, let down, and given no other choices, to the point where they're, like I said, stagnated. They don't know to ask anything else. This is another thing that's going on. It's like people will say, oh, this sucks or that sucks. All these things suck. But there is no step to saying, okay, well, that sucks. I'll do better. There is just not that thought is just not popular. The thought of improvement. People would rather get caught up on how bad a movie is and put it down than just leave the stuff alone. No one can quit it. They'll keep watching it and they'll keep complaining. And they think that by spending money on it and seeing it and then going home and writing a bad review of it, they're getting even. They got your money. It doesn't matter how you feel about it. You paid for it. The end. And in a way, that's encouraging them. You know, they see that and they see they don't have to do any more. They'll go down as low as they figure they can. Just to get through it. I mean, now there's this whole thing they call hate watching. shows, they'll come up with something, especially Disney. They come up with stuff that's going to like create a fan furor, and it's just another part of publicity. Now that it's like celebrities. Nowadays, to be a train wreck celebrity is marketing. It's not a shame and a disgrace. That kind of hate watching. Let's see what kind of trouble they're in now. No. It's the whole thing about achieving and going ahead. Not as much today. No. And you hear about celebrities and even politicians, and you hear about people going as low as they possibly can. That's what people buy, apparently. And I think it all started with something like the live shows, like cops seeing people get arrested on the live screen. That kind of a vicarious thrill of seeing somebody else get in trouble and seeing how crummy they are. People love that better. Mm-hmm. Because I think they are, they can relate to that. They want to see people who are worse off than they are. And if I won't name names, but getting into political, people don't want to see a person, a politician, who can do better than they are. People would rather see a slob if he's the right color. Just because he validates what they are. Mm-hmm. They don't want to see people who have any more class because they feel dictated by it. They feel like, oh, well, you know, they're taking my country away. So the sort of thing that's going on, everything works towards stagnating society and stagnating culture.
Yeah.
And I hate it, but that's the way people think now. If I hadn't seen people who were actually above me in skill and knowledge, then I would have had no reason to do it myself. I would have had no role model. I wonder what young people nowadays use as role models. What is there out there? What news is out there that is positive? And you see a person doing something that is not just for their own good. You can see that. There are people out there who do that, but they aren't covered in the news. Because that's not news. Nowadays, everybody's into self-destruction. That's the best thing you can do. The best thing you can do is make money for yourself. And I see people my age, and what do they talk about? Especially here in Bloomington, Indiana. They'll talk about their cars, maybe their families, and it stops there. They're not creating. They're not creating, and they care about nothing, no kind of culture except television. You know, and when I look at PBS now, both the children's programming and the adult programming, you know, it's all gone to that kind of entertainment now. You know, they would never dare, I mean, arts and entertainment, what's it turned into? Just another entertainment network, grabbing for the cash, just like everybody else. So it's everything is dumbed down. You're not going to get like Alistair Cook, very British guy, introducing dramas anymore. That's elitist. And it's stupid.
You have a Patreon. When and why did you start that, and how is it going?
Well, it's going quite well. I'm happy with the response. And as to how it got started, I don't know. I heard about Patreon from here and there. And I said, well, I might as well do it just to see. Just you know, it might not help, but it won't hurt anything. And put it together myself. And, you know, it's always in a state of flux, but I've gotten to a point now where it is appreciable, and I'm going to just keep going on it. It's nice to know and see it when people do respond, and you know that you're having an impact on other people's lives one way or the other. So yeah, that'll go on for the foreseeable future. Right now, I'm planning to do more camera on myself while I draw things, videos, because people seem to like that. It's actually a lot of fun, you know, just having people know what I'm doing lately.
Can you talk more about what you have on there already, just in case people want to check it out?
Well, I just post anything I do up the paintings, and I give hints about the way I feel about the art in general, not just me, but in just, you know, the art itself, and giving observations about art that I'm doing and art that I've learned and why I do certain things and how certain things work. And just what's going on in my mind at the time. But yeah, it's very art oriented. Most of my posts are including something new.
How did you get into when you were doing like music album covers? How'd you get that opportunity?
Well, that was a friend who was doing graphic work for a small label. And he said, well, we need you to do this. There was nothing dramatic about it. It was just knowing the right people. And so that went on for a long time, a few years. No magic stories with that.
So you've had some experience teaching. Do you like teaching, and what does it kind of do for you?
Well, I keep thinking about that. I did teaching. I don't like it as much because it's like many students do it because of hand holding. They're afraid of striking out on their own. One of the things I do when I'm teaching is I say, you know, exaggerate it, do it more. Now you do it there, you get there, and then you can decide when to pull back. And a lot of students, they can't do that. They can't go further. And after a while, I've had students say, well, can you teach me anime? And I don't know anything about it, and I have no interest in it. But it's kind of a safe territory. I find that students, I've had some good ones, and they were very happy with me. But when people don't have a drive, I sometimes I'm at a loss. And also, people don't need to go to school to learn comics. I mean, it's the most primitive art, you know, that there is. You can go back to the cavemen, basically, see it. But it's kind of a racket now about, you know, even the Society of Illustrators in New York, their meetings are about, you know, comics classes. It's like, no. You see what's in front of you. Then you do what you do. So that's something I don't like about teaching in person. I like to do it online, but I just yesterday I was talking with somebody and thinking about doing a class that's a mix between teaching, you know, the technique and the history of it and why these things are done. And that sounds more interesting to me than saying, oh, you know, we do this stick figure. A kind of a sociological study,
mm-hmm. just
building your mind and going on from there. That's something I'd really like to try.
Yeah. For me as an instructor, even from teaching 5-year-olds to 70-year-olds, it's like, as long as you try, like, I can get you there. But there is a like, because my father's a professor, so he's seen the transformation of students, of what they used to be and what they are now. And so there is a lot of handholding where he'll, you know, write the syllabus, do a video, write it in a post, and they still are like, I don't know what to do.
Yeah, sure. I mean, they have to take their mind out of a certain place, that's all. And it takes going into areas of discomfort.
So much of American culture is not wanting to be uncomfortable now.
Yeah. All comfort zone. If you want to, you can live entirely in your comfort zone 24 hours a day. If you're like into something like fishing or something, you can get the fishing channel and never see anything else. I honestly, the video game thing, no. I recall when I was a kid, again, being old, one of the rules was you don't watch TV for more than 3 hours a day. Now people are watching it 24/7 and their parents are watching it 24/7. And I see people walking down the street every minute, just their nose on that thing. You find your network, you find your window, and you find your friends, and you stay there. And like I said, well, it's like everything is about, you know, empowering, which is different from encouraging. I mean, when they say, when a Disney movie says, live your dream, what does that mean? That's garbage. Living your dream, what is this, does that really tell you? Keep faking yourself out. Keep faking yourself out and give us money so we can fake you out some more. No, you're right about that comfort zone business.
Mm-hmm.
People can't deal with life unless they are comfortable. People can be like war, you know, thrilled about war, and they haven't had the experience themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So they're doing it from far away. Of course you can do that. And people go on about, oh, I was highly disturbed by this, or scary television logos or whatever. Well, go spend an hour in a war zone and then you'll know what scary really is.
The interesting thing about, you know, when you said living your dream is that you people like my age and younger who grew up as like Disney kids,
right,
and they put like animation on this pedestal and they're like, okay, I want to do that. And then they finally get into the industry and it's like, oh, it's a job.
Right.
It's not a fairy tale land.
Yeah.
So you kind of pub up the animation in the industry and you fall in love with it. And then you come into the real world once you get into the industry and it's 9-to-5 and you just got to do the work.
No, you're absolutely right. That's another thing I think about is that whatever studios there are now, and they are depending on people who are so in love with the medium that they're willing to work like 8 hours overtime for nothing and go through any kind of, bad condition because I'm in it. It's like comic books. The rates for comic books have not gone up appreciably since World War II. But there are people who are so in love with it that they'll do it for free, and it'll just go on forever. I mean, there's hardly a bargaining point now, because if you don't do it, if I don't do it, they'll find somebody else who will for less. I mean, when I see the conditions our people are working under now, it's ridiculous. We used to get paid for doing these stupid, endless tests. If somebody wanted to put you to put pencil to paper, you were going to get some money. And I saw in the 90s that did. That's when it started changing. That's when Hanna-Barbera and Cartoon Network were having these pitcheroo contests where you send them ideas for free and you either get something going or you don't. They started taking on the fan club culture because they knew they could. So, it was interesting. In the 90s, the old guy started dying off, and it's like the studios, they were very happy with that because there was no more of that tradition where you're doing a trade. Now it became something fans do. I've achieved my dream. They can walk all over you then.
Do you still write poetry?
Well, I've done little things here and there. I haven't worked on it lately. I am working on an autobiography. I work on that in fits and starts. Sometimes it gets too depressing for me to go on with, and I put it away. But I think I got some things to say with that.
Nice.
I know that I'm coming across as a negative guy, and I'm not happy about that. But it's like I said earlier, I believe in getting, right to the point. No nonsense, No, I don't have time for that.
What do you hope for the future of animation as far as innovation, storylines, characters, etc.?
I'm at a point where I'd say, well, it would be nice. I'm at a point where I say there are a hell of a lot of talented people out there. And I think that overall art, animation art, is of a higher standard than it was in the 90s. More people are much more polished. They just don't have the content. So it's not my hope. Really, it's more of my saying, well, it would be nice if they walked and talked their own message. That's my dream. Right now, I don't see the opportunity for that. As long as people are gonna play by the network rules. And I suppose so. That means that independent animation has to be done, but that gets brainless too, because people start saying, "Well, I'm gonna go indie," and then they don't do a damn thing. Like, how many people who say that are gonna finish a film? It's more talk. So all I can see right now for the future of animation is for people to do their films, do their projects, and to just not expect anything. If you're fortunate, something will come out of it. But I hope. I mean, also, the technology is just amazing. I mean, with computers, you can do line drawings, you know, what they used to do on cells and paint and all that right away. So many things are fast. If you want a pencil test, if you want to test your animation, you scan it and you do it right there. And I remember when they had to wait, you had to wait days or weeks for films to come back and then have your heart broken. Just do it right there. You can have cell layers, not have to worry about paint changes and this and that. You can have as many layers as you want. You can film one set of drawings and then, you know, keep it going forever if you want. You can do all these things. But when they were coming into it in the 90s, that's when Disney said, okay, well, we're not doing drawings anymore, and everybody followed suit. So that's one thing that can be done, and is I don't think the technology is being taken full advantage of. And my hope would be that somebody says, yeah, and stops trying to do Toy Story and uses it for their own ends. I mean, mm-hmm. that's the only way the studios are going to change, is if they see somebody else's success. They don't want to be first, but they'll break their necks to be second. So you might as well, be yourself. That's, I guess, mm-hmm. that's people being themselves. Even if there is not a market for it at present, do it. I got into animation so I could earn money so I could do what I wanted. Mm-hmm. I thought a lot of the stuff I was doing was crap, and that's just the way it's going to be. But you do that to save and just so you can do your own thing. That's what I was doing. So you do stuff you don't like. You try to make the best of it. Another one of my hopes and dreams is that it will get away, animation and comics will get away from this fandom level, and people will start becoming professionals again.
Yeah.
Like I said, there are a lot of talented people and they can do it. It's just that they can't do it in that arena. There has to be a new arena. And I'm not sure what it is. I don't have the answer to that, but there's got to be an outlet that of something besides the networks and the comic books that are being done and follow their own rules.
Mm-hmm.
That's my wish, hope, whatever you want to call it. I'll tell you, I stopped watching network animation back in the 80s.
Mm.
So I am not that familiar with what they're doing now. So I'm not sure where that would go. All they can do is do it and, look for the outcome, not do it just to make your $1 million and expect that to happen right away, because it's not. I mean, people now in every kind of profession, they get into it to get rich and to sell it to somebody else. And that's not experimenting. That's supply and demand. Finding its own voice. I think animation has to go back to starting all over again to get anywhere. You got to divorce itself with what is going on now. All I can do is hope and dream that somebody comes along to do that.
I think the norm today is like everybody using someone else's voice. Like I remember I joined a Facebook group years ago of like animation in Africa, and I was like excited to like see them tell their own stories, but they were like telling Western stories. And then, as a Black American, we'll tell African stories or Caribbean stories because we don't see Black American culture as a viable culture. And so it's just like everybody else is telling everybody's stories because you don't see the the wonder in your own story.
Right, right. Yeah, this is so. They used to do things, maybe I said this before, that couldn't possibly have been done elsewhere. And so I think people in any nation, it's becoming a world identity. And so a lot of
people... Because the world is smaller now.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of people, a lot of nations, the first thing they have in their minds on starting a project is selling it to America. And I see a lot of student films that are that way. So a lot of, when in Africa they're doing animation, they may not even be doing it for their own country's consumption. They may just be waiting until they become another overseas studio to supply to Hollywood, to America. And I'm interested, what are the African nations, what do they tend to do in their own films? What are the materials, and I mean, you know, story wise, and
it's getting much better today, but when I joined that Facebook group, it was maybe 15 years ago or something like that. But I feel like they're leaning more into their own stories, because on Disney Plus, you have Kazazimoto, where they had, you know, 10 different people from different African countries tell their own stories. So it didn't feel Western. And then Super 4 on Netflix, which is, I think, is that from Zimbabwe or something like that? So I feel like in this era, they're more leaning into their own stories and seeing, you know, the power in telling their own stories. Yeah. So I'm excited about that.
Would you say that different art styles are coming out of this? What do these things tend to look like? Oh, really?
Okay. So Kazazimoto on Disney Plus is like an anthology where some of it is 2D, some of it is 3D, and it's very different styles of, like, you can see the influence of the particular African country in the short episode or whatever like that. And so it's a mix of 2D and 3D. I'm not sure if I'm familiar with any people from African countries doing stop motion. That would be something interesting to look into, but I know they're doing 2D and 3D. What are three movies you'd recommend to my audience and why, or TV shows, and they don't have to be animation if you don't want.
I was going to say poster art, to see how attention is grabbed. Mm-hmm. I like the movie Lust for Life a lot. It's a romanticized thing about Van Gogh, but it shows a development of one's like passion and where it goes in art and in self-expression. And what else? Maybe I might say the classic Disney stuff like Snow White and Pinocchio. I don't know how necessary that is, though. Mm-hmm. Asian art painting. Mm-hmm. I admire that very much. There's a manual that I recommend to everyone. It's called Cartooning the Head and Figure. It's by Jack Ham, who was a marvelous artist, and he drew in a lot of different ways. And this book is one that doesn't tell you about a formula. It has all sorts of formulas and styles, approaches, and different techniques. So I'm thinking of that. That I think that is a necessity. Everything is books, but I'd say the Bernd Hogarth books of Dynamic Anatomy and Illustration, just to know how to put things together. I have a channel. I have two channels on YouTube that would probably tell the story better than I can.
And I feel like with anatomy, I feel like people doing animation don't realize even if it's stylized, anatomy is still important.
Oh, yeah. I mean, one thing I found as I was getting older is it's definitely easier by looking, observing, and they go, it pays to know exactly what you're drawing, even if you don't use it, where things are, without guessing. I used to guess all the time and work by instinct. And working by instinct is fine in some ways, but it's not as easy. You're trying to find some cute way to do it instead of, okay, this goes here and that goes there, and then going off on your own tack.
If someone was producing a documentary about you, what things would you want them to highlight about your life outside of your work in animation and art?
My bringing up and the abuse and dealing with it. I would like to see the effects of poverty. And life? Just having to muddle through one way or the other. There are a lot of different things. It's hard for me to say, because I'm so interesting that I have a hard time narrowing it down.
Of course.
Self-discipline. I don't know.
So if someone wanted to, reach out to you, particularly, you were talking about the class you were thinking about doing, how could somebody reach you?
Well, I have a Patreon page named after myself. So you'd go to patreon.com/MiltonKnight, and you see that way, maybe discuss it with me. I have got a master page, MiltonKnightMenu.blogspot.com, where, and that's a page where I lead to other pages of illustration and painting and so on and so forth. So if you're interested in the particular kind of work that I do, the page will probably like be there to it. You can address that.
So I want to thank you for coming on my platform and allowing me to highlight you. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you. I had a good time. Thanks very much.
And to everyone out there, I want you to like so I know it's real. Comment and tell me how you feel. Subscribe to Zildjian and sign up for post notifications to show your zeal. And I'll see you in the next video. Peace.